702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
Coming up on the show today, storms wreak havoc across the Western Cape. The latest on roads, schools and flooding. One death in Paarl. We'll speak to the Premier in Gauteng. Emergency services are also on a high alert as heavy rains continue to fall. Three units at Kusile to be taken offline. The MK party and the IEC are back in court over whether Zuma can be a candidate. And we'll wrap up the weekend sports. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Let's get straight into it because the situation across the country being affected by inclement weather. In the Western Cape, we've seen schools being closed in some parts of the Cape Winelands, the Overberg, Helderberg as well. We'll find out more about that situation and whether it could continue. Roads being affected as well. The Premier has held a briefing in which he has given out full details. Amo did say, and I may have misheard her, we just had a conversation about it, about the fact that the Huguenot Tunnel is closed, but it's open to all vehicles in both directions, according to SANRAL. So we'll bring you the latest on that, the power situation, and in the city of Cape Town as well. Energy teams dealing with a large number of power outages as well. Human settlement teams are also assisting those whose informal structures have been damaged. Let's start with Lauren Isaacs, EWN reporter, to give us a picture of what's happening across the province. Lauren, good afternoon to you. Give us a sense of where there are issues and what's happening at the moment across the Western Cape.
Good afternoon, Mandy. Well, according to the latest update from Premier Alan Wendy just now, he's telling us that there have been some flooding in parts of the Overberg at the moment, but nothing major has been reported at the moment in terms of localized flooding. Mandy, there are still level 4, 6 and 9 warnings in place for disruptive rain in some parts. With the biggest warning, of course, for the Cape Winelands and the Overberg areas. So we are still expecting some rain this afternoon, but for now, at least where we are in the Green Point, Sea Point area, it is dry, windy, but dry. We've also heard from the Gift of the Givers, and they're saying they've been inundated with calls for help since about 1 o'clock this morning. Of course, Mandy, in addition to the inclement weather conditions here in the Western Cape, we've also had several fires over the weekend in the Cape Winelands district, Glencairn, Nyanga, and a massive fire in Kayamandi in Stellenbosch, where I believe residents had to be evacuated. So members of Gift of the Givers have since this morning responded to over a dozen communities, and the team has also been sent to Lwandle in Strand, where we hear that in excess of 3,000 people may have been affected by the strong winds, just their homes, roofs, and entire structures that have been blown over and damaged by the heavy, heavy winds we are experiencing.
Lauren, thank you so much for painting that picture across the Western Cape for us. Our reporters are out and about in Strand, as an example, where those people have been displaced to. But you can be our reporters also on the ground. So send us a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567. Tell us what you see. Tell us where you need help. Let us know what the situation is. Well, as Lauren mentioned there, and as I mentioned as well, there was a briefing from the Western Cape Premier, Alan Wynne, earlier today to give us a sense of what is happening with those various hotspots and schools and emergency services. The Premier joining us on the line now. Premier, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Obviously an incredibly busy time for you at the moment. So thank you for being able to speak to us. Tell us what is your immediate concern at the moment and which areas have got your attention.
Hi, Mandy. Thank you. Yeah, wet and windy Western Cape. I must say that in a way, I'm a little bit more relieved than I was yesterday. You know, it's level 9 warning in the Overberg. At the briefing this morning, there is flooding, but not flooding like we've experienced last year in September. So we've got flooding in Swellen Dam at the One River. Three Swellen Dam banks are rising, not drastically so. The same thing with the low-lying bridges in Buffalo Yachts I've seen some footage now of a crossing near the Hinland Arda Valley with a low-level crossing that's flooded over. And it's still raining, about 80 millimeters by this morning in the Overberg region, but not drastic. So, you know, I'm still quite optimistic that we are going to be able to deal with this quite well. But the devastation that came through from yesterday with those high winds, and of course that's also part of what fueled the fires, the ones down south in Simonstown, the one in Kayamundi. Kayamundi, 262 structures, 785 people. Then overnight, another fire in Nyanga, 125 people affected, 20 people at a fire in Khayelitsha. And then, of course, many, many people in informal areas where, of course, corrugated iron roofing was ripped off. And but, I mean, also informal areas as well. And specifically around the Drakensberg and Stellenbosch area, which I traveled around yesterday afternoon, the number of roofs off, the number of trees. We've got 26 schools that were damaged. We had hospitals that were damaged. We had shopping centers. So places were evacuated. Patients were moved around in the Mediclinic in Stellenbosch, but that's all been sorted out now. So, and then lots of devastation that's being sorted out, and then quite a few electricity outages. I think if I had to add them all together from the briefing this morning, around about 33 areas with outages. They're focusing mainly to get water pumps and sewage pumps operational, if you know, those would be the priorities, and then they're moving on and busy connecting as fast as we can. And yeah, so at the moment, it's monitoring, it's making sure that our teams are out there, but also trying to repair, open up roads that are closed. I heard you say in the beginning, in actual fact, the Huguenot Tunnel was opened at 6 this morning for all traffic. Mm. Overnight, it was closed overnight for heavy traffic, heavy-duty vehicles. Just light vehicles were able to come through the night, but from this morning at 6, it was open. But Clarence Drive is still closed. The Chapman's Peak Drive is still closed. We've got, I'm sure there's another one or two that are closed. I know that in the city of Cape Town, from Mitchell's Plain through to Musenberg on the Beach Road, that's closed. And there are roads that have been closed and then getting open again because it was trees that were down. But are you
generally satisfied with the response and the cooperation between emergency services and various departments? And are you generally happy with how things are recovering?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I every time I go into these disasters, and I mean, we seem to just go from one to the other, I just become more and more impressed by our emergency teams and how good they are at dealing with this kind of pressure. And, I mean, that's from disaster management themselves and how they pull it together, right down to, you know, you've got fire officials, you've got traffic officials, you've got health officials, you've got education officials, and they're all out there doing their thing. Yesterday I was out yesterday was 13, the 26 schools altogether, there were 13. I was at one of the schools in Paul, and the next thing, this construction team arrives, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday afternoon, and the construction team arrives. And they said, I said, hi. They said, oh, well, this is school number 4. We've done 3 others. We're just patching so we don't have too much more damage. And, of course, when a part of a roof comes off, if you leave it, you're going to get wet damage into the school, but you also have the risk of further roof fly off. And it's just been amazing to see the response. And then I must thank the citizens for their response. Our fire stations are getting people dropping off. You know, we've got people that lose everything in these fires. And people are dropping off clothing and, you know, dropping off food. And of course, I must also mention Gift of the Givers. They're out there on all of these sites doing an amazing job. And so, yeah, I think citizens also step up when we have these kind of disasters, these kind of crises. And, you know, our citizens just me every single day, as do our emergency people.
Premier, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for giving us an overview there of the situation. That's the Western Cape Premier, Alan Windey, giving us a sense of what is still a concern in terms of roads and electricity and displacement as well. Well, let's check in now with the head of disaster management in the Overberg District Municipality, Reinhard Geldenhuys. Reinhard, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. Give us a sense of where we are at the moment in the Overberg District Municipality and what issues you are currently dealing with.
Good afternoon. Yes, I think the Premier has given you the high-level overview. So what we're dealing with at the moment, what we had rain overnight. The bulk of the storm system, if we can call it that, only started moving into our area early this morning and through the course of the day. So fortunately, we, and I think the Premier also mentioned this, we're not getting to the levels that we were in September, but we are getting a lot of rain and our water levels are rising. So what's happening at the moment, our water courses are rising, rivers are rising, low water bridges are now becoming impossible. So we're closing roads and so on. In our towns, some of the low-lying areas are now beginning to flood. So people are getting water in the houses and so on. So a lot of water diversion taking place. We haven't received any reports from evacuations from any of our municipalities yet, but fire services in the different municipalities are out there pumping water and so on. So it's not as crisis as it was in September with a lot of water dumping being dumped on us, but it is a slower onset incident, and we're dealing with it as we go.
Are there any immediate concerns for you? We know that there are there's more rain expected today. I think that the City of Cape Town Mayor said another 50 millimetres of rain expected today. So is there anything that you are particularly concerned about that you're watching?
Yeah, we've got our, I almost want to say our normal culprits or suspects that in the rivers that we know that will start rising. So some of them will only start rising and closing off town tomorrow. So if the amount of rain continues, then we are watching the likes of the Karsh River at Bedarstorp, the Fiesel End River at Alderstrom Prison, because that's always a risk of being cut off. But fortunately, you know, through the coordination also with the provincial centre, we've got the police divers on standby. We've got our NSRI rescue swimmers from the three bases in the area on standby. So we're watching that type of thing now. We don't foresee masses of water coming through, taking people away, but we are cautioning people to stay out of the low water courses and so on, and monitoring those areas.
Reinhard, thank you very much. Reinhard Geldenhuys is the head of disaster management for the Overberg District Municipality. Let's look now at the situation at schools in the Western Cape. As I mentioned, some schools were closed in the Cape Winelands, Overberg and Helderberg area as well today. Will this continue? Kerry Mochlin is the spokesperson to the Education MEC, David Mania. Kerry, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. What is the situation with schools at the moment in those areas where they were closed today? Will this continue, or have you not made a call yet?
Thanks so much. Yes, we did take quite an extraordinary decision to close all of the schools in the Cape Winelands district, the Overberg Education District, and then sort of parts of the Metro East district, the Helderberg area, for the day today. That was based on the very severe weather warning that we received from the Weather Service. At this point, we are currently waiting for an update on that weather prediction to see what the decision will be for tomorrow. But certainly we're watching that very closely. And as soon as that decision is made by the head of department, we will communicate with schools to let them know, and they will let parents know as well.
I don't suppose that there's a timeline of when that call might happen if people need to plan around it. What kind of ballpark timeline you might be able to make a call today?
Well, look, we're obviously going to try and do it as soon as possible, but we want to do so based on the best available information. So we are also reliant on the information that's coming from the Joint Operations Centre, from Provincial Disaster Management, and then obviously from the Weather Service itself. So we want to do that as quickly as possible, as you correctly say. There's a lot of arrangements that need to be made. I must say that we really do appreciate the efforts of our schools and our officials, and also especially of our parents yesterday, who had to turn that round quite quickly. And you would have also seen that we even had contractors already fixing schools yesterday. So it's a big thank you from us for that support, and we know that that support will continue, and we will definitely keep them updated as the information comes in.
The Premier mentioned that some schools had been damaged. What is your overview of the situation in the province in terms of damage to schools and getting them fixed? You mentioned the contractors as well.
Yes, so as of this morning, we had 26 schools that had reported damage of some kind that ranges from some gutters knocked down to actually entire sections of the roof that were blown off, especially in the Cape Winelands area where we saw lots of videos of roofs being blown off. I expect that number will rise quite quickly today as evaluations are done after the night. And we should have an update on that later today. But the last that I looked at, it had already increased by another 20. Obviously, we're going to prioritize the emergency ones first. And if there are any schools that will have to stay closed for a bit longer, then that decision will be made based on always the safety of learners and teachers at those schools.
Kerry, thank you very much. Kerry Markland, spokesperson to the Education MEC, David Mania. So we will communicate that message about what's going to be happening tomorrow as soon as it does come out. You can hear that on EWN, I'm sure. Let's get a sense now of what is being done to help those people who have been impacted, who have been displaced. Gift of the Givers Project Manager, Ali Sable, joining us now. Ali, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. Where is Gift of the Givers at the moment in the Western Cape, and what are people needing most?
Okay, we are currently at the Nomzamo informal settlement, where about close to 1,200 people have gathered at the community hall. These are people directly affected with the current intense weather we're currently facing. We are assisting them with elderly people and young moms here. We are assisting them with hot meals, personal hygiene care items, baby care items, and of course, blankets. Simultaneously, we have a team set out in the Drakenstein Cape Islands area, where we received calls from 1 a.m. this morning for our assistance. So our teams are currently on the site there as well, and we have a team deployed in the Cape Metropole area to assist the informal settlements around the Cape Metropole, your areas such as Khayelitsha, Kraaifontein, and Wallacebeen.
And what do you need from people? If our listeners want to contribute, if corporate South Africa wants to get involved, what are your requirements?
There's a huge need at the moment for blankets and personal hygiene care items. These residents had to be evacuated from their homes. Some of them are staying in community halls. So there's a huge need for blankets and personal hygiene care items. The numbers are increasing hourly as our teams are getting calls from various communities around the Western Cape. The heavy rains must still come down. It's the storms. It's a strong wind at the moment. The heavy rains must still come down. And we are expecting from 100 milliliters of rain to come down going into Tuesday morning. So we are expecting more calls to come through. And the need currently on the ground is for blankets and personal GK items.
Ali, thank you very much. Ali Sable, Gift of the Givers Project Manager, giving us a sense there of what is needed and the work that's being done to help those people that have been displaced. So if you missed it, just a quick wrap at the moment. Schools are closed today. We're waiting for a decision on whether or not they'll be closed tomorrow in the Cape Winelands, Overberg, Helderberg regions as well. The Huguenot Tunnel is now open to all vehicles in both directions. There are still some other road closures. Power is the big issue. So parts of the electricity network have had minor structural damage. So there are issues around power. City energy teams in Cape Town dealing with power outages. Gordon's Bay, there's a big power outage as well. And the rain is still falling. So that's a wrap of what's happening in the Western Cape. In Gauteng, we also have heavy rainfall today. So emergency services also very busy at the moment in terms of monitoring those low-lying areas and the roads as well. Robert Mulaoutsi is the EMS spokesperson in Johannesburg. Robert, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. What is the situation in Joburg at the moment in terms of the heavy rainfall and any issues we should know about?
Good afternoon, Osmendi, and afternoon to the listeners. So far, we have not yet received any major incidents overnight and also this morning. So we still have our monitoring teams monitoring most of our low-lying areas, which is mostly our informal settlements. When we have wet weather conditions like the ones we have, we normally have our residents mostly being affected, the ones who are residing in our informal settlements in the city. So far, we don't have any major reports, but we're still pleading with our residents to avoid crossing river streams. We also have a challenge of some church communities who normally visit river streams when we have rainfall like the ones which we're having now. So we're pleading with them to refrain from going into the river streams and conducting, you know, baptism rituals, because they might be swept away while they're trying to conduct those kind of rituals. We also have our aquatic rescue unit, which is also on high alert throughout the day and, of course, overnight, just to monitor all seven regions of the city. So we're pleading with our motorists out there to avoid crossing, you know, flooded roads and flooded bridges. We're hoping that we might have, you know, most of our river streams in the city being full maybe right towards midnight. Yes.
Robert, thank you. And thank you for the work that your teams are doing out there as well. Robert Mulauti from the EMS in Johannesburg issuing a warning there. So what can we expect over the rest of the day? I mentioned that there's going to be more rainfall in Cape Town. Let's get a sense of what's happening across the country. Elizabeth Viljoen, Weather Service Forecaster, Chief Weather Service Forecaster. Elizabeth, thank you as always. Tell us what we can expect and how much longer we can expect this inclement weather across the country.
Hi, Mandy, and thank you so much for having me on your show. So, yes, we've got quite a large weather system, and it's quite an intense weather system that is currently affecting South Africa. This is what we call a cut-off low pressure. So it's just a big name, but all it is really an intense weather system, and they're quite notorious. So when you've heard us speak about this before, it's generally linked to hazardous impacts. So in terms of devastation and things like that, these are not good weather systems because they do bring about a large amount of rainfall, strong winds, and even possibility of severe thunderstorms. That's what they're known for historically. This system is currently affecting most parts of the country. Bulk of the rainfall expected over the southern parts of the country. So we're looking at free states over the central parts and the eastern parts of the country. And then, of course, Western Cape and the Eastern Cape. We've also got numerous warnings that we are currently issued. The highest being an orange level 9, and this is for disruptive rainfall over the Overberg district as well as the southern part of the Cape Winelands. So if you can visualize that, that's really over, if you picture the Western Cape province, it's more over the central part of the Western Cape province, so just there to the east of the city of Cape Town. And this warning is mainly for disruptive rainfall. And why we are issuing this is, firstly, there's a lot of rain expected, but also there's a lot of other numerous factors that have taken into account when we've issued this warning. Firstly, there's been fires in the area, so that means very little vegetation, and therefore that can result in mudslides and rock falls, because if we think vegetation is what really keeps those mud and the rock all in place. So now we've got a lot of rainfall coming over exposed areas, and that can cause those rock falls as well as mudslides. Also, in addition to the heavy downfalls of rain, we're also expecting strong winds. So now we've got saturated ground and strong winds. So that means we can see uprooting of trees. And that's a bit of a problem as well, because that can obviously fall on cars, fall on homes, block roads, all of those types of things. So that's what we're really looking at in those areas. We've also got a possibility of some disruptive rainfall in Gauteng today, but we're only issuing a yellow level 4. So we're looking at a low likelihood of significant impacts, so general flooding of roads and settlements is possible. By tomorrow, so good news, we're starting to see a bit of clearance tomorrow. Showers will continue over the southern and eastern parts of the country, but in the Western Cape, this rain is going to be east of the city of Cape Town. So Cape Town city itself is going to be dry. Focus is more along the Cape South Coast, so that Garden Route area is really what we're keeping a close eye on. As this cut-off low pressure moves away from the country, what these systems do is they've got what we call in meteorological terms, we call it a scorpion's tail. And what does a scorpion's tail do? It likes to sting. So we're keeping a close eye on that coastal route or the Garden Route because we just want to see exactly what is going to happen there. And we've got, as we've got that onshore flow, strong winds again and therefore more rainfall, especially if you can picture it pushing along that coast. We've got those mountain ranges.
Yeah.
That all helps more rainfall. So that's what we're keeping a close eye on for tomorrow. But then from Wednesday, rapid clearance as this whole system moves away.
Elizabeth, as always, thank you so much. Elizabeth Fulion, Chief Weather Forecaster at the SA Weather Service. That's a big wrap for you of the situation across the country, and we'll continue to watch that.
What's up, Mandy?
On 072-702-1702.
Good day, Mandy. Don't you think that the DA needs to start provide a prepared speech to John Steinhausen? Because whatever he's currently doing, he's destroying the reputation of the party. Because I think the off-the-cuff communication for John Steinhausen is not benefiting the DA. Thanks, David.
Hi, Mandy. You speak to the Premier of Western Cape, Mr. Windy, about a windy Cape Town on a windy Cape Town day. Very interesting.
I mean, at least you can see the humor in this. Thank you for pointing that out. Look, this is the dichotomy, right? So you have the situation where you have the Western Cape government led by the Democratic Alliance dealing with these issues, but it's in some way, and dealing with them very effectively, I must say, from an outside perspective. But then you've got this kind of shadow of what John Steinhausen said at the weekend. I must tell you that Raisa Mzansi is in Cape Town today campaigning. Despite or because, perhaps, of what John Steinhausen actually said about these other opposition parties campaigning in the Western Cape. So what do Raisa Mzansi do? They head straight to Mitchell's Plain, and that's where they're campaigning today.
702.
702.
Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
The Judicial Service Commission is today interviewing four candidates in a round of interviews for a post on the Constitutional Court. But there's something very interesting about what's happening. And it's the fact that this is unique because there are more candidates being interviewed who are not judges than candidates who are judges. And that is because, and you'll remember this, that Chief Justice Raymond Zondo has now invited non-judges to act at the Apex Court. It goes back to 1995 when Sir Sidney Kentridge SC acted on the Constitutional Court. So let's unpack this further with Mbeki Zeli Benjamin, who's the Research and Advocacy Officer at Judges Matter. Mbeki Zeli, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. So tell us who is being interviewed today, and I mentioned why this is unique. So tell us about these various candidates.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mandy, and good afternoon to the listeners. Yes, we actually just started now. The first candidate that is being interviewed is Professor David Bilchitz, who is a professor of human rights at the University of Johannesburg, and he's one of the candidates who are non-judges who were invited by the Chief Justice to be acting justices of the Constitutional Court. And in fact, the Chief Justice just mentioned now that it is historic because it hasn't happened in about 25 years that a non-judge gets to act on the Constitutional Court. And part of the reason why the Chief Justice invited non-judges is because he saw that when you become a judge and you're not already a constitutional law expert, you're unlikely to get that expertise as you continue in your years as a judge. And so he thought it would be a good idea to get outside experience on constitutional law to sort of bolster the experience that already exists at the Constitutional Court. And so the next candidate will be Advocate Alan Dodson, who's also acting on the Constitutional Court. He's a senior advocate. The third candidate, unfortunately, had to pull out, and that is Advocate Matthew Schalskelsen, who's in fact the son of the former Chief Justice Schalskelsen. And he had to pull out because he unfortunately had a cycling accident, and so he couldn't continue with this process.
But there are Supreme Court of Appeal justices who are being interviewed, right?
Yes, there are two Supreme Court of Appeal justices who are being interviewed. That is Justice Thati Makgoka and Justice Ashton Skibbers. And both of them, funnily enough, have a link to Judge Shopping. The first one, Judge Thati Makgoka, sat on the Judicial Conduct Tribunal that found Judge Shopping guilty of gross misconduct that eventually led to his impeachment. The other one was, of course, Judge Ashton Skibbers, was a judge of the Western Cape High Court before he was promoted to the Supreme Court of Appeal. But, of course, each of these judges are excellent judges in their own right. They have broad experience. And in fact, one of the gaps that academics have pointed out in the Constitutional Court, that there isn't enough commercial law experience. And both of these candidates have plenty.
It's very interesting, this idea of having a non-judge appointed to the Apex Court. What are the legal requirements for somebody to sit on the Constitutional Court? Do they have to be a legal practitioner? Do they need a certain amount of experience? What does the law say about this? And what is the thinking around having non-judges, even though they are constitutional law experts? What kind of benefit is there to the court?
So let me start with the second part of your question first. The Constitution itself at Section 174, Section 4, says that only 4 members out of the 11 members of the Constitutional Court need to be judges at the point at which they are appointed. That's because in 1994, it was envisioned that there wouldn't be a lot of experience in the South African judiciary in relation to issues of constitutional law, in relation to issues of human rights, and which is why President Mandela recruited quite a number of non-judges to be justices of the Constitutional Court. That's including Justice Albie Sachs, Justice Kate O'Regan, who was a professor, Justice Yvonne Mokoro, who was also a law professor. So the idea was that they would enrich the Constitutional Court with their experience that is outside of the formal judicial system. And currently, the kind of requirements that are needed for you to be a justice of the Constitutional Court, they are, of course, quite broad, and they require you to be suitably qualified and be fit and proper. And so one of the big things that the JSC looks out for is your track record of judgments, how many judgments you've written, how many have been reported in the law reports, and how many have influenced or impacted on the law. So those are some of the important things they look out for.
Mbeki Zeli, thank you so much for explaining all of that. We'll be watching your reporting on those interviews. Mbeki Zeli Benjamin, Research and Advocacy Officer at Judges Matter. So as he's explained, 4 candidates. It was 5. Matthew Chaskelson, Advocate Matthew Chaskelson, had to drop out because of a bicycle accident. But 4 candidates are being interviewed for that vacancy on the Constitutional Court.
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
Well, also happening in the courts at the moment is this ongoing fight between the Mkhonto we Sizwe Party, MK, and the IEC, the Independent Electoral Commission. So the MK is trying to overturn an IEC decision which effectively stops former President Jacob Zuma from being one of the party's candidates to parliament after the election. So the MK party has now gone to the electoral court to appeal the IEC's decision, and Advocate Dalia Mpofu, SC, acting for the MK party, arguing that the exclusion of Zuma from the elections will disadvantage him and his supporters, and he's arguing that the MK party supporters will be deprived of their right to vote for a candidate of their choice. Have a listen to Advocate Dalia Mpofu.
So, our courts have said so many times in respect to Section 19 and other rights in the Bill of Rights, whenever there is an opportunity not to infringe those rights, then the court must literally grab it. And we find disturbingly that the attitude of the Electoral Commission in this matter is exactly the opposite. The attitude has been, let's see where we can catch him. And when we do catch him, let's make sure that he doesn't come out alive. That cannot be the attitude of a South African institution, let alone an independent institution, whose job it is to ensure that all our Section 19 rights are realized. So that's the first thing. And we cannot afford as a country to disenfranchise whether it's former President Zuma, the MK party, or whatever number of people support them. They claim that it's millions of people. They may be right. We'll know by the 29th of May. But it doesn't matter. It could be 3 people. But those people cannot be disenfranchised at a whim, as it were. So we're dealing with the rights. We actually at face value look at dealing with section 19.3b, but in reality we're actually dealing with the whole section 19, because we're dealing with the right to vote for those people who support this party and former President Zuma. Their right to vote would be infringed, because they will not have the right to choose to be represented by the people or persons that they want.
Advocate Dali Mpofu, SE, they're arguing on behalf of the MK party. Sure, legally, I mean, I am no legal expert, but it does sound like a bit of a stretch for him to argue that the rights of supporters will be deprived of their right to vote for a candidate of their choice, keeping in mind, of course, that former President Jacob Zuma has got a criminal conviction and was sent to jail, and that excludes him from being a candidate to go to Parliament. So it really is just absurd for him to make that argument. I imagine the Electoral Court will deal with that as we expect it to. Just a reminder, of course, the MK party has turned to the Electoral Court because they're trying to appeal the IEC's decision, which excludes Zuma as a candidate.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Also happening in court today is the case against the four men accused of murdering AKA and Tibbs. So that's happening at the moment in KZN. And the accused are now responding to the state's case in that matter. Advocate Paul Jorgensen, representing accused four in that case, Ziwethemba Gwabeni, has been questioning why the Durban businessman, Mfundo Taba, who has been widely reported on, is not a co-accused, because it's been reported and it's come out in court that he allegedly transferred the funds, and there's been a response to that as well from the Taba family. So have a listen to Advocate Paul Jorgensen, and the sound is courtesy of Newsroom Africa.
The immense problem that the state has in this matter, and which can be described as the elephant in the room, is the status of Mfundo Taba and the failure on the part of the state to arrest him. The state has alleged that I am the mastermind behind the killing of Kenan Forbes, aka, and Tabela Mutswana, and that an amount of 800,000 rand, which was transferred into my account, was payment for the so-called hit. The state has alleged that the transferring of the funds was payment for the shooting. In this regard, paragraph 71 of Pillay's affidavit refers. According to company records, Mr. Sidney Mfundo Taba is the sole director of this company. When the money was transferred, a reference was used as consult. This, we are of the view, was done to disguise the nature of the funds, as same is viewed to be payment for the shooting.
Advocate Paul Jorgensen there, representing accused number four in the AKA and Tibbs murder case.
And now, it's back to Mandy Wiener on the Midday Report.
This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
12:52 on the Midday Report. So as part of our pre-election coverage, our reporters at EWN have been out and about traversing the country, focusing on different provinces. This week, Khomotso Modise and our video team have been out in Gauteng, having a look at what's happening there and focusing on various issues in Gauteng. Khomotso joining us in studio. What are some of the key issues you've looked at?
Well, Mandy, one of the interesting stories that we covered is the story of Benoni. I mean, that area, like parts, many parts of the province, has been deteriorating, but also they've got a major problem in terms of crime as well as homelessness. And it was interesting to see how it's the taxi association in that area that has actually taken it upon themselves to ensure that there's safety in that area. They've gone to the police station, the local police station, to say, we realize that you guys are struggling to maintain law and order. We want to collaborate with you here in the form of a community policing project that we do. And so it was so interesting, but also beautiful to see taxi owners coming together. There was an instance, Mandy, where, you know, someone came to report to the taxi drivers that a tavern that is situated just meters away from a school in that area was blasting music during school hours. And the taxis went to approach the tavern owner to say, you can't be doing this. We saw taxi drivers speaking to people that were wandering in that area and, you know, looking, I suppose, they believe, looking suspicious, asking them, can we help you? Do you have money to go home? We can give you money to go home if that's what you need. We can take you home. Mm-hmm. But what's not going to happen here is you're not going to be wandering around here not knowing where to go. So that was a really interesting story that we found in Benoni. And there's a clear collaboration between the community there and the taxis.
Well, thank you so much for putting together this report from Khomotso Modise, having a look at some of those electoral issues.
The roads in the Vaal can only be described as rotten, as they are riddled with potholes and cracks that only the most skilled drivers can maneuver. This man, a taxi driver, says the main road dividing Everton and Sebokeng is the toughest part of his route.
It's tough. If you are not careful while driving on this road, you could lose control of the steering wheel and the vehicle. It's dangerous. We're carrying people's lives.
While the people of the Vaal struggle to get their local government to repair and maintain roads, the people of Ebu Mandini on the West Rand can only long to have official roads with names and numbers in their informal settlement. It's been 24 years since the people here were moved from a field that they occupied illegally in Vlakfontein with the promise of being organized into a formal township. Without the township declaration, there can be no formal infrastructure such as drainage systems, sewage pipes, and roads.
As it stands, no ambulance can enter here because of the poor conditions of the roads. When we have funerals, the funeral cars do not enter. We must carry the coffin all the way to the main road.
In Amanskraal, in addition to fearing that they may lose their lives as victims of crime and violence, they also fear a glass of contaminated water may cause their premature death. A pensioner from Amanskraal says whenever government calls them to stadiums to collect water, she feels degraded and stripped of her dignity.
You've got to wait 2-3 weeks. You can imagine standing in the sun with those buckets. Then you've got to take those buckets into the yard.
She says when they can't buy bottled water from the stores, they resort to buying refilled purified water from local traders in the township.
You must improvise and you can't drink the truck water. No. You can rather buy the refilled one rather than drinking the truck water.
In Johannesburg, with an undeniable degeneration of the city, which has now become an eyesore, riddled with crime, filth and lawlessness, some are choosing to see hope. Carmen and Saul Bamberger, owners of luxury furniture shop Miller's Antiques in Durmfontein, say this business has been running here for about a century, over three generations, and they have chosen to brave the state of the city.
Once you leave St. John's School on my right here and you come through Yeovil, then down through Hillbrow, past the old Alhambra Theatre, under the railway bridge and into what's called New Durmfontein, it is just unbelievable. There is no refuse collection. There, people are living in abject poverty. Going that way, if you go back onto the highway and underneath the bridge, I mean, there is sewage coming out of the buildings, there are brothels in shacks, not even in buildings.
There are total collapses in pockets
of the area.
I think there's some very high functioning areas.
Like where we
That's where are. People get together and they get together and contribute towards a security company and an improvement district, where things are kept clean, because we can't rely on the services we're paying for to the city, so you have to do it to yourself.
The resounding sentiment is that most of the province is in complete disarray. The current provincial government, led by the ANC's Banyaza Lesufi, has promised to return the glory to the land of gold if they return to power. Khomosa Modise, Eyewitness News in Gauteng.
Khomosa Modise with that package, having a look at some of those issues for residents of Gauteng ahead of the elections at the end of May. And I think for Joburg residents, so much of that is so, so familiar around the sewerage, around the infrastructure collapse in the city of Joburg, and a reminder to people about what they will be voting, what you will be voting for when you go to the polls.